Have you ever wondered why exactly it is that things usually sound better at home than they do on stage, in auditions, or even in lessons? It's easy to chalk it up to nerves or assume that you just have to practice more or get more performance experience. And sure, those things certainly are part of the puzzle, but a lot of times that's not really the true root cause. If you've been confused by the inconsistency of your performances, I put together a free 4-minute quiz called the Mental Skills Audit, which will help you pinpoint your mental strengths and weaknesses and figure out what exactly to adjust and tweak in your preparation for more consistently optimal performances. You can take the Mental Skills Audit online at bulletproofmusician.com/MSA. That's MSA for Mental Skills Audit. And again, it's 100% free, and it'll take just 4 minutes to get your results emailed to you as a PDF. This is Noah Kageyama, and you're listening to the Bulletproof Musician Podcast. Every Sunday morning, we'll take a look at a new research-based tip or technique to help you practice more effectively or perform better under pressure. And on the first Sunday of every month, I'll have a guest from the music, sport, or research world who will share their insights on how we can all be a little more awesome in the practice room and on stage. The first few minutes of bringing a puppy into our home were pretty awesome. He was so tiny and cute, the kids could barely contain themselves. I felt like the best parent ever. And then he peed on the carpet. Because, of course, while I knew he shouldn't be peeing on the carpet, the little fuzzball clearly did not. And since everything I read online suggested that it was critically important to make sure the little guy did not make any mistakes, I was super stressed out, pretty much 24/7. Because for every mistake he made inside, I was told that I'd have to counter this with dozens, if not hundreds, of successful repetitions outside. Of course, it wasn't very realistic to think that I could get through potty training with no mistakes at all. But the fear that one little slip-up could undo dozens of correct repetitions made every mistake seem really monumental. Similarly, I think we all know that perfection in the practice room from day one is impossible. Yet it still feels like we should be striving for perfect practice and minimizing errors as much as we can. But could it be that this fear of building bad habits actually ends up leading to a kind of practice that stunts our growth and learning? A pair of Taiwanese researchers took a closer look at two approaches to teaching students how to play pétanque. What's pétanque? Well, it's a game vaguely like lawn darts, except with hollow metal balls instead of flying metal spikes. And what's lawn darts, you ask? If you were born in the 70s or before, you might remember having a set as a kid. But for reasons you can probably guess, the game is now illegal in the US and Canada. And if you can't conceptualize the game of lawn darts, you can get a sense of it in this slightly morbid silent film I found on YouTube, which is a hilariously accurate depiction of how a game of lawn darts inevitably escalates when a group of kids are left unsupervised to freely indulge in their creative impulses. Anyhow, back to the study. 75 college students were enrolled in pétanque classes and started out with 3 weeks of basic training, partly to review basic safety guidelines because throwing metal balls around other people does pose a safety risk, but also to cover the rules of the game, ball grips, and throw styles. Then the students proceeded with 6 weekly 2-hour training sessions on pointing, or in other words, the various throwing techniques players use to get the ball as close as possible to the target. Each training session began with a 5-minute introduction by the instructor, followed by 20 minutes of free exploratory practice in teams of 4 to 5 students. During this free practice period, students were encouraged to experiment with different techniques without any instructor guidance, and to try to work out the physics of the game through trial and error. Then, for the next 30 minutes, the teams took turns sharing what they had discovered in their practice with the rest of the class. A collaborative learning approach, which in itself actually sounds like a pretty cool way to learn. The first half of each class was identical for everyone. But the second half of class went one of two different ways. In the guided error group, the instructor summarized the mistakes observed in each team's exploratory practice, demonstrated some common errors, and without showing students the correct way of doing things, described the connection between the students' incorrect movements and their resulting effects on the flight and landing of the ball. For example, the teacher might point out that a low arm position would result in a straight ball, which tends to roll too far away from the target, but did not teach them the desirable arm position. And then, in the next 40 minutes of practice, the students continued their efforts to figure out how to throw the ball most effectively, as the instructor continued to focus on describing the link between their incorrect movements and the results. The hope being that a better understanding of the cause and effect relationship of the wrong motions would enable students to figure out more optimal movements on their own. In the correct motion instruction group, instead of demonstrating errors, the instructor summarized and demonstrated the correct throwing technique. For example, the teacher would highlight a standard arm position for throwing a parabolic curveball, in other words, raising the arm as high as the shoulder. Then, in their 40-minute practice session, students focused on trying to replicate the instructor's correct motions. And meanwhile, the instructor continued to reinforce the correct motions, while mistakes were minimized, ignored, or corrected immediately to the correct way. So how did these two different approaches to teaching affect performance? Well, after the classes were completed, students took an accuracy test, which involved taking 10 throws, where they received 5 points if the ball was within 15 centimeters of the target, 3 points if within 30 centimeters, and 1 point if within 50 centimeters, for a max score of 50. The guided error group scored an average of almost 12 out of 50, with a range of 6 to 29. The correct motion group, on the other hand, performed worse, with a 9.61 average and a range of 6 to 19. Students were also given a self-efficacy assessment with questions like, I have confidence in exercising my wrist to make the ball spin, and I am confident in my ability to control the ball at a certain height. And on a scale of 0%, which is no confidence at all, to 100%, which is full confidence, the guided error group scored 71.89, while the correct motion group scored 62.83. Meaning, the students who learn by making mistakes seem to have more confidence in their ability to improve and get better than those who are taught using the correct movement approach. Why might that be? Well, the researchers wondered if starting with an emphasis on correct motions may have accentuated the gap between the students' current skill level and just how far they had to go to perform correctly, a gap that may have been rather daunting and discouraging when they continued to fall short. Conversely, by allowing students to start wherever their skill level was and focus less on doing things perfectly, but simply make tiny tweaks and incremental adjustments, students may have felt like they are making more progress and encouraged to keep going. I think it's important to note that students in the guided error group weren't simply practicing mindlessly or engaging in blind trial and error. They were encouraged to approach each throw as an experiment, and the instructor was very much focused on trying to help them understand the underlying mechanics connecting their movements and the performance outcomes. So that even if a throw was unsuccessful, it was important for them to understand why, so they could make an informed adjustment based on their growing understanding of the physics of the sport. Which seems to suggest that instead of ignoring times when we get something wrong, taking the time to explore and deepen our understanding of why it didn't work could help us identify a more optimal way to perform the skill. Like how an understanding of why shifting to a higher position with the scroll of the violin pointing towards the ground is less effective than shifting with the scroll pointed up can lead to more consistent shifts. Meanwhile, our dog still makes the rare but occasional mistake, and it still totally stresses me out. But when it comes to learning new motor skills, maybe mistakes aren't all bad. Because as long as we are mindful of the link between our movements and the results of these movements, not just mindlessly allowing errors to pass by without being curious about the underlying mechanics, maybe mistakes could be a really integral part of developing mastery. Frustrating, but crucial ingredient in the learning process that could potentially help us learn a lot more about our craft than if we were to get everything correct from the get-go, but have no clue how we did what we did or why it works when it does. You can find links to this week's study and other resources like practice hacks and the audition cheat sheet at bulletproofmusician.com/blog. And if you found the episode helpful, please share it with a friend or practice buddy who you think might also enjoy experimenting with this during the coming week.